Where do you think you're going to put a tree that big? Bend over and I'll show you. You've got a lot of nerve talking to me like that, Griswold.
I wasn't talking to you.
Spreading holiday cheer like Clark Griswold, this is The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
'Tis the season to be merry.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
They said there'll be snow at Christmas. They said there'll be peace on earth. But instead it just kept on raining. A veil of tears for the virgin birth. I remember one Christmas morning, a winter's light and a distant choir, the peal of a bell and that Christmas tree smell, and eyes full of tinsel and fire.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have everybody with us tonight. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Getting ready. We are legitimately 1 month, 2 days away from the big day.
Don't remind me. I'm already behind.
I can tell everybody right now, if you're looking for good reading material, I know of a book that they should be getting.
Ooh.
What book are we going to review? No, we're not reviewing a book, but what book are we talking about here? One Bounty?
Bounty by
written
me,
by
Jason
written by
Pajak?
A certain Jason Pajak, exactly.
A book that made the McNally Robinson Books of the Season
Look
list.
At that!
Yes.
I also want to bring attention to everybody as well. As of yesterday, the Melbourne Mustangs Championship apparel went on sale.
There you go.
So if you're looking to bring something in that's unique for your hockey fan, Melbourne Mustangs. Go orange and black this year, folks.
They got really nice gear,
I gotta say. They do, actually. So yeah, lots of stuff there. This song that you're hearing, you might recognize. Pretty famous song, I guess, in terms of what's going on. This is Greg Lake's I Believe in Father Christmas, which was a surprise hit back in November of 1975 when it was released. Lake has always maintained that it's not a Christmas song, even though it was released in November and kind of took off during the Christmas season. But he's maintained it's not a Christmas song, but a protest song about the commercialization of Christmas.
Okay.
While the man who wrote the lyrics, Peter Sinfield, has stated the song's words are about a loss of innocence and childhood belief, describing the sound in the song as, quote, a picture postcard Christmas with morbid edges, unquote. So it could be true in terms of what's going on with that. This song, though, Jason, we talked about this before the show started. This song, though, reached number 2 in the UK singles chart. Denied the vaunted number one status by which longtime favorite from... It's been number one twice in terms of its history, but...
A song that nobody believed in at
right.
the time, Bohemian Rhapsody.
And ironically, nobody believed in this song either. Greg Lake thought this was going to be a big flop in terms of him putting it out, so... there was one guy who was quoted as saying the two worst forecasted number one and number two songs ever.
Yeah, and then going back a few weeks when Thriller was considered the worst single on that album.
Like, we legitimately keep missing on these. These artists got to have more faith in themselves.
Exactly.
Tomorrow, of course, is Black Friday, which is one of the largest shopping days on the calendar when it comes to the holiday season. So the song kind of fits with the date in terms of commercialization of the day in terms of what's going on. So,
by the way, most Black Friday deals aren't actually deals.
Let's not be crazy about this. But the reason that we do have Black Friday, though, is everybody's probably aware of this, and I'll fade this song in.
The turkey at the table.
If you're an American today, it's your Thanksgiving.
Eat that turkey.
So as we listen to the turkey song, there's the turkey song, Thanksgiving song from Adam Sandler a little bit. Do you know why? Do you know why Americans celebrate on a Thursday, not a Sunday?
I mean, I feel like you're going to tell me.
I am going to tell you, because George Washington originally decreed the last Thursday in every month to be Thanksgiving. Again, he wasn't anybody important at that point in his life. He wasn't president. He wasn't made president. But he said that, you know, that's when Thanksgiving should be celebrated. However, I fade out Adam a little bit here. President Abraham's 1863 proclamation stated that Thanksgiving would be celebrated on the last Thursday in November annually by Americans. So the president finally did decree that was going to happen in 1863. Mm-hmm. However, the last Thursday in November of 1939 fell on the last day of the month, prompting President Franklin D. Roosevelt to move that year's Thanksgiving, to the second last Thursday of November to allow for a longer Christmas shopping season. Again, it's all about money.
All about money. I always...
Commercialization of Christmas.
It's holidays like... I understand why most holiday... A lot of holidays, at least, have the whole, like, oh, it's the first this of this or the last this of this,
right,
you know?
Yeah.
But I think it's just a lot simpler to just be like, it is this day.
Well, again,
every year.
That's what happened. So not all 16 states decided that Roosevelt was insane and didn't follow that.
Yep.
But 1941, the House of Representatives passed a joint resolution declaring Thanksgiving Day to be the last Thursday in November of each year. Mm-hmm. The Senate amended the resolution, making the holiday the fourth Thursday in November. And President Roosevelt then signed it into law in December 1941.
You know what's a lot easier to remember, and it doesn't matter when it comes up?
It's the 4th November.
25th of December, 31st of October,
so
17th
originally,
of March.
So originally, when before Washington stated it was going to be on a Thursday, originally it was on the 25th of November every year.
What? That makes way more sense.
But again, that's what happened.
Like, okay, and for people who are like that don't know why our... Thanksgiving is different than American Thanksgiving. It's because, like, the true intention of Thanksgiving is a harvest festival.
Correct, yeah.
And the end of the harvest season in Canada is the end of October, which is why our Thanksgiving is at the end of October, not the end of November.
Correct.
Because it gets colder faster here. Having it be a month before Christmas makes way more sense to me.
That was the
just being a random day.
That was the day it was celebrated prior to Washington saying it was going to be on the Thursday, the last Thursday of November every year.
It's like, nobody, it's like, yeah,
nobody said he was bright.
You have the 1 month countdown to Christmas. Like,
just for the record, no president has ever declared the Friday following Thanksgiving to be Black Friday either. That's never been a presidential decree.
Nah, that's
so.
Just capitalism.
So there you go. Not only was the song that we led off with
why
about
why is it called Black Friday?
I believe because that's when they, again, I can't say this for certain, but I was going to say there's a lot of stores that were racking up black ink on those days because they were putting on all those sales way back when, and it was to clear out all the merchandise that hadn't moved during the year.
Oh, well, yeah, because like I know, you know, we know the reason behind like the name
right.
of Boxing Day.
Yeah.
I was just wondering like why, where Black Friday, like, because it always struck me as like a very weird name
so
for a day.
Anything that didn't sell over the summer was basically put onto Black Friday sale in order to
yep.
get it out of the store so they could mm-hmm. restock for Christmas.
Yep.
And Black Friday is when they made all that money back, basically. Mm-hmm. So
man, I'm sorry. Again, America got it right in this time. If Canada really cared, we wouldn't be like, oh, yeah, this product is 15% off
whatever.
For Black Friday.
Yeah, let's not talk about this. I'm just going to get angry. But again, that's the whole start of our show is about commercialization. So there we go. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about how Thanksgiving was about the Christmas shopping season. Talked a little bit about how Greg Lake's song was about the protest of the commercialization of Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's get into the law and order of things because I got to have a discussion about this.
Yep.
But it seems like Boston Bruin forward Milan Lucic's career might be over. Lucic was in court on Tuesday where he entered a not guilty plea on the charge of assault and battery on a household member. That household member was, of course, his wife, Brittany. He's basically been indefinitely suspended by the team in terms
yep.
of having this case being tried before a court. But here's why things got ugly. And again, we'll discuss between each of these points here, but as per the police report, Lucic, quote, and his wife got into an argument around 1 a.m. after he returned home from a night out. During the argument, Lucic allegedly yanked his wife's hair and threatened to choke her, his ire initially sparked by his inability to locate his phone and belief that she was hiding it, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
So he thought she was hiding his phone and decided to put his hands on his mm-hmm. wife, which if he yeah. was inebriated, being that he had a night out,
mm-hmm.
not good because it's a widely known fact that drunkenness will not save you from the law.
Exactly. I was going to say, for the people in the back, being under the influence of drugs and alcohol does not exonerate you from committing a crime.
This is why
he still did commit a crime, and we live in a society of law and order.
This is why drunk driving laws exist.
Yes. if you commit a crime, you need to go through the proper procedures of being charged and tried for that crime.
According to the report, Lucic allegedly told his wife as she attempted to walk away from their argument, quote, "You're not going anywhere," unquote. This is when he grabbed her by the hair.
And also, it is very, very common in domestic violence incidents for the victim to try and defend the perpetrator for a variety of reasons, many of them being you're usually being victimized by somebody that you love and care about and don't want them to get in trouble. So the fact that she, you know, tried to cover it up when the police came knocking and
well, no, she didn't.
Her.
She didn't try to cover it up. Like, she didn't really add anything to the report other than telling them what happened. Mm-hmm. But she never once tried to say, like, don't press charges. Mm-hmm. So this has gone forward because she legitimately wants to make sure that I shouldn't say that. This has gone forward because the police report was damning enough that they could press charges.
What I saw is that she gave that report and then after the fact.
Right.
Gave a different story.
Which is what it could happen. But again, the police report that was entered into the case here on Tuesday is pretty damning.
Yes.
As per the report, Lucic appeared to be inebriated when the police entered the condo. There was a broken lamp beside a nightstand, and Brittany had a red mark on her chest. Mm-hmm. So clearly.
Yeah, that was the thing that she later said that didn't happen. That
right.
They.
Whatever. But I mean, the police report alone has him assaulting her, which you can say hair pulling is not assault. You can try and cover it up. If she feels she was assaulted and the police feel she was assaulted, that's what it is.
Yep.
Like, you can argue all you want. Again, he pleaded not guilty. He'll have a chance to defend himself. We're not saying that he's guilty by any means at this point.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, he's going to court at some point for this. Yep. So,
and that's the society we live in.
Right.
We don't live in a society where you can abuse your spouse. He has to go through the court system.
Now, there was some good that came out of this, although not a lot of good, but a little bit of good that came out of this, because Milan Lucic has enrolled in the NHLPA Player Assistance Program. Again, if this is to assist him with alcoholism or any sort of alcohol-related issue, that's good. If this is related to anger issues or anything to do with his behavior at home, even better. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, he is getting help for whatever reason. Again, it's confidential. We can't make. I'm just speculating on what it could be for. But he is getting the help that he needs.
Yeah, and that's the good thing. Like, that's what we want, right? Like, we want, you know, we're not going to, obviously, with an assault like this, we're not going to lock him away and throw away the key, right? We want him to be able to come out of this and be better and improve and get his life, you know, whatever is going on, whatever, if this was
he's
like
got
a
three young kids, so,
yes.
Yeah.
If this was like a one-time incident, fine. If this is indicative of something else, like, it's good that he's getting this help. Like, right, regardless of whether this is a one-time incident or something that's indicative of something that's more long-term, the fact that he is seeking help and is getting that help, and he can now go through the court system, go through whatever charges and whatever indictment might happen. And then come out, go through this assistance program and get his life going again. That is what we want from situations like this, where people's lives are not destroyed, because it's not just his life. You mentioned he has three young kids. He has a wife. You know, that would impact their lives too in a negative way.
Yep.
So we can, you know, rehabilitate, not just punish.
So the question becomes, what do the Bruins do now? Because, I mean, Lucic wasn't really helping. I mean, I shouldn't say that. He wasn't.
He was healthy scratched before this.
Right. He wasn't really helping them a lot on the ice, but I can see him being important off the ice in terms of his jovial nature, in terms of just who he is. But,
yeah, he's a character guy.
I mean, really, the best move for the Bruins to undertake here would be to place him on waivers for the purpose of terminating his contract under the conduct unbecoming clause in his contract. Mm-hmm. I mean, they did it with Mitchell Miller after the whole outpouring of, what are you doing, Bruins, with Mitchell Miller? And I doubt Boston is going to want that negative press following them around, especially if opposing fans can tee off on Lucic whenever he's in their building as well.
Yeah. And I think that even prior to this, it was kind of, I don't want to say it like as it throws them a bone in order to get rid of him, but it is a good time for him to make his exit, because this was going to be his last contract. It was going to be his last go around. Fortunately, it ends the way that it does, but it lets them move on.
Yeah.
And I'm so, for one thing, like, I am so happy that conduct unbecoming clause is now baked into every NHL contract, because there was a time where that didn't exist.
Oh, I'm very aware.
And guys got away with so much stuff.
I mean, guys still get away with a lot of stuff.
They do.
But, I mean, so 35-year-old Lucic is currently on a one-year, $1 million deal with the Bruins. Again, it'll probably be his last. I can't see them going forward with anything else, but we'll have to see what the Bruins do after. Because they can't do anything while he's in player assistance. That's the problem. So they're going to have to make a decision once he gets out of the player assistance program and then figure out what they're going to do. But by that time, it might be April, it might be May, it might be June, and at that point, it won't matter.
Yeah.
So,
and we should say, suspending somebody indefinitely when they are undergoing a court case is a very important part of the process. For some reason, when it's a guy that's been healthy scratched, I didn't see anybody complaining about the fact that he was immediately suspended by the team when he was charged. But
I don't think anybody's going to complain that he isn't with the team. I think the issue though is that there's a larger-than-life sort of persona that he carries in terms of who he is. And don't get me wrong. He's been on lots of sports shows. He's had a good time talking about his career. He likes to have fun, poke fun at himself,
likes to poke fun at
his career. Again, nobody's questioning his personality or who he is. But if you're going to make the case that he shouldn't be suspended, what do you want the Bruins to do? They can't pay him while he's going to court. Like, he's got to be on the ice to earn the money.
But innocent until proven guilty.
Innocent until proven guilty doesn't mean anything if you're suspended.
Yeah, I know.
If they had terminated his contract without any sort of court, without him even going to court at that point, you have a case at that point in terms of innocent until proven guilty. But he's in court. He's trying to get this. He's entered a plea. He may not be found guilty, but they've suspended him just to say, okay, get yourself sorted out. And then we'll proceed at that point.
Yeah, I'm just pre-arguing with the Oakley crowd.
I know, and I'm just trying to I'm just trying to make sure that everybody understands that what Boston did was the right set of moves.
Exactly. He committed a crime, and he's going to court. He is suspended until that is rectified.
And then we'll see what the Bruins do after that, which is exactly the right step again. So, weird thing happened on the weekend. If you missed it, on Friday last week, it seemed the NHL had a bit of an information leak that it needed to fix. As the NBA's Utah Jazz, were pictured walking into the Delta Center in Salt Lake City for their game against the Phoenix Suns, wearing what looked like a brand new, unseen Seattle Kraken jersey.
I found this so funny.
And everybody was like,
What's going on here?
Why are they wearing these weird, what look like Winter Classic jerseys?
We already knew.
We had a pretty good idea, yeah.
I think Aesthetics had the logo leak.
Yeah.
But not like the full jersey. And there was a leak, I think, right before.
Sinbin Vegas had alluded to a couple of designs for both Vegas and Seattle.
Sinbin Vegas had the logo.
Yeah.
For the Vegas one, but
the next day, AEW, the professional wrestling organization, sent out a promotional image of hosts RJ City and Renee Paquette, formerly of The Score. Renee Paquette, prior to their event in Inglewood, California, wearing the same Seattle jersey and what appeared to be a potential Vegas Winter Classic jersey. So again, a lot of stuff that went on. Finally, the NHL came out and yesterday the NHL came out and said the jerseys are the official jerseys of the two teams.
What kind of miscommunication happened where the Jazz not only walked out with them, but had the jerseys on hand? Also, why the Utah Jazz of all teams?
But why AEW and why Utah and why Inglewood, California? Like, what? Was the Seattle Seahawks game not a good enough place to have that?
Was the Vegas Raiders not good enough?
I don't know. Anyway, yesterday the NHL confirmed the jerseys being official of the two teams for the 2024 Winter Classic. So let's talk about these jerseys a little bit
I hate them.
Well, my thoughts are varied on this, but let's go to the Adidas design director, Matty Merrill. Now, Matty Merrill is, again, big shot in Adidas. He's one of the guys that helps design a bunch of these jerseys. We'll start with Vegas, because Vegas's was
a Walmart jersey?
Boring. Conceived maybe under hallucinogens, but let's talk about this.
Awful.
So Merrill said, quote, "The Vegas Gold currently in that franchise, it's very blingy, it's shiny, it's metallic. It's a textile that we worked with them for multiple years in order to create a performance fabric that had true metallic quality. Well, that wouldn't have existed in 1917, which was 100 years from when they were founded. Now, 1917 is important. We'll get to that in a second. Mm-hmm. What color would that be? It's going to be a muted gold. What would the striping be? It's going to be a lot more simple. It's got a very simplified striping, so their uniform has just one big stripe on the sleeve. We do a bunch of other stuff like the stitching of felt numbers, the sort of the fleur-de-lis points on the numbers, all that stuff. It's got that the decorative sort of showmanship of Vegas, but not the neon or LED strip of today, unquote. So let's start with this, because 1917 was important because that was the year the Seattle Metropolitans won the Stanley Cup. They were the first American team to win the Stanley Cup,
exactly.
And the game is being played in Seattle. So that's important to know that that date is important. Again, it is 100 years from when Vegas was founded. That is also true. But my question becomes, if you have a team that has 6 years' worth of history and a team that has 2.5 years' worth of history, why? Why are you throwing back to something that doesn't exist? Because not only did Vegas not have ice back in 1917, they barely had a city in 1917.
I was just looking up pictures like, what did Vegas look like in 1917? Oh, it was just desert and a few shacks.
Right. It was legitimately like your concept of like the old West Town.
The city didn't
exist. Right.
So it's like you're throwing it back to something that didn't exist.
So my question becomes,
in multiple ways.
And again, I understand what they were doing. There is an old Westy kind of feeling to the jersey in terms of some of the embroidery and some of the stuff they have on it. But my question becomes, why? Vegas doesn't have this history. Why are we trying to force feed faux history onto people?
Because they wanted the NHL wanted their cake and to eat it too. They wanted the big draw of having both expansion teams playing outdoor against each other. It's like, isn't this a great story? The league's expanding. Both these teams are great. They're talented. One just won a Stanley Cup. They're financially successful. But they also wanted the heritage and the history. You know, we're going to bring in the whole like 1917 Seattle Metropolitans history and the barber pole jerseys. They wanted to smash these two things together when it really should have been the Seattle Metropolitans versus the Vancouver Millionaires, a jersey that already exists, mind you. But no, they had to, again, have Vegas go back to a history that does not exist. How does Vegas have a reverse retro jersey if their history was 4 years old at the point?
Well, their reverse retro jersey wasn't actually retro or reverse. It was just a third jersey, basically.
Yeah.
So, but in this one, they have tried really hard to make it look old. And I get that. I get the heritage side of it. I understand the goal of it. But my question is this, and this is where, and I know we talked a little bit before the game. You have a brand new team in Vegas. You have a brand new team in Seattle. You want to put those two teams together in terms of a big game. Mm-hmm. Why not do a Winter Classic and go 100 years into the future?
Because these are two very future-forward-looking cities.
Right.
Right? Because Vegas is all about the glitz, the glamour, the show of everything. Seattle is a tech hub.
Right.
It's always looking towards like the climate and the future and the planet and all of these things. You have such a great opportunity to do something different.
So as I suggested again before the show when we were talking about it, is why not do a jersey that, again, do a jersey that's in the same mold of the Seattle Metropolitans. I have no problem with that.
Yep.
Add LED lights to it. Add make the numbers light up on the back in terms of what you got. Mm-hmm. Have the helmets do something kind of cool in terms of what you can put on them. Let's really work at making this game a future Winter Classic.
Vegas literally put black light strips in their third jersey.
Right.
Like, let them do something weird and kooky. My issue is, why do we have this trend in the NHL now with all of these throwback jerseys where we're taking heritage retro looks and we're slapping the modern colorway on them?
Well, because again, we don't really have a lot of basic that we can sort of go back to. Again, I'm totally in agreement with you that the Metropolitans should have been represented.
Yeah, exactly. Like, not just, you know, have the barber pole jersey with the red S on it and whatever. No, like, go full back to the tricolor,
right?
Green, red, beige with the red S. Do what Vancouver did with the Vancouver Millionaires jersey, where they put on maroon and beige and had the V with the Millionaires in it, which is completely different from their regular colorway, but it properly represented the team of the past. Like when Montreal did their centennial and they did all of those different jerseys to represent the different eras of Montreal the Montreal Canadiens franchise, where they had like the Bulldog stuff. When Toronto does the St. Pat's jersey, they don't have a St. Pat's template that they just slap the blue and white on. They go all in with the brown pants and the beige and the green and everything. Like, why are we taking modern colors on old templates. Why not just revive and modernize the old jersey and make it look nice?
So, and my other thing that I don't, I get that they're Golden Knights. I understand they're the Golden Knights in terms of their team name. But why not just drop Golden from the name and just go with the Vegas Knights on this one? And and legitimately, like you said, with the color strips in them, allow that to become your knight, your knights. You remember how Dallas has that knight line, that skyline knight jersey they wear,
the neon green.
Yeah, do the same thing but with the actual black light coloring on it, and then have those black lights as they come out, and have everybody sort of like, you could do so many cool things with this future game idea that we have, rather than trying to force feed a faux history on everybody.
But the NHL, because that's honestly something the NBA would do. The NHL has this problem where they're always looking backwards.
But it's fine if you have that history. And I don't,
Vegas doesn't.
Right. I don't mind if you have the history. And again, the Kraken don't have that. Seattle does.
Yeah.
Seattle gets that. But again, we're not talking about how that team was wiped out by the plague in 1918.
Yeah.
Or the Spanish flu in 1918. Like, the Spanish flu decimated the metropolitans in terms of them not being
recovered.
In terms of them not being able to defend their Stanley Cup title. Like, we don't talk about that stuff because, well, that's just bad history. We don't talk about bad history.
But
so my question becomes, start writing new history. Mm-hmm. Start making this a different look. And don't go Stadium Series. I'm not saying you need to go Stadium Series.
With the chrome logos?
Right, and screw that up.
The one where Lou Lamoriello said, yeah, no, and he had the Devils just go out in their
we're not asking jerseys. We're not asking you to come up with something that looks Stadium Series. We're talking future. You have to work in new technology into the jerseys. Whether it be LED lights, whether it be the black strip, the black light striping in the in the thing, whether it be you have a way that the helmets can light up, whether you have
shiny chrome helmets.
Well, yeah, but the chrome helmets are awful. I hate chrome helmets.
The argument is, like, you're already doing weird stuff with the uniforms.
But that's what I mean. Like, you should be able to take it to another level.
Yeah.
Especially with some of the technology the NHL has a chance to get their hands on now.
Yeah.
Like, we're putting microchips into jerseys already. Let's just go one step further and put LED lights in along the striping or along the back where the numbers are, so that when the players come out in the dark, you can see the numbers on the ice.
Yeah, but the NHL, whenever they try and do something modern, they have an NFT collection that comes out 3 years too late. They are obsessed with the past.
I have an email about that if we get to them today.
Okay.
You're going to laugh at it.
They are obsessed with the past. And I say that wearing a retro, an original
no, you know what?
2000s Columbus Blue Jacket sweater.
Again, I got a story about that logo if we get to it as well. But keep going. Because I saw that when you walked in. I was like, oh, story time.
Yeah. The NHL is obsessed with a past, and a past that doesn't exist. Like, we are now scraping the bottom of the barrel where Edmonton and Calgary, two teams and two cities with immense history, are really grasping at straws at this point to do things like this, and it shows.
Well, I mean,
the NHL just has to try. But
again, it comes down to doing the same thing every year because it's easier to do it that way. And I legitimately get angry at it because I don't understand. Why is it that the NHL, who is a billion-dollar company, afraid to stand on the edge of something cool and go, we're doing this?
Yeah. And, like, again, I will bring it back to the fact that we do not need so many outdoor games, so many specialty games every year. Just have the Winter Classic on New Year's Day. Make New Year's Day the NBA owns the Christmas Day games. Own New Year's Day.
But again, we're I'm not saying we're afraid to do that, but at the end of the day, it's like the NHL doesn't want to step on anybody's toes when they're one of the big four.
I can't wait.
And you're number four of the big four.
I can't wait for 5 years from now where the NHL decides to do an in-season tournament
because the
NBA did it.
Stop.
And the NBA made multiple billions of dollars.
Stop, and I'm going to burn the arenas to the ground if that happens. But let's be honest, Edmonton Oilers are probably going to miss the playoffs this year. Based on their loss last night, it seems like that might be their fate this season after they spotted Carolina a 4-0 lead through the first period en route to a 6-3 loss that puts them at 5-12-1 on the season with just 11 points. Only San Jose and Chicago have less points. San Jose has 7, Chicago has 10 than Edmonton. Here's the stat I wanted to get to, though, because this is the important one. Since 2005-2006, 76.3% of teams that were in a playoff position on U.S. Thanksgiving, that's today, 76.3%, that's three of every four teams, that were in a playoff position on U.S. Thanksgiving made the playoffs, according to NHL stats. That doesn't include 2019 due to the COVID situation, 2012 and 2021 because neither season started before American Thanksgiving, and last season simply because it didn't update the math. Mm-hmm. But in the 14 seasons we're talking about, that's 16 teams per season, 14 seasons worth of hockey, 76.3% of teams that were in a playoff spot on Thanksgiving in November made the playoffs.
Yeah.
Edmonton is currently 6 points back at Calgary in the Pacific and are 10 points back at Seattle, who occupy the second wildcard spot in the West. They're not making the playoffs.
It's gotten to the point
unless they go on a crazy run.
I think the math was like they had to win like three out of every four games or something, like two out of every
three
four
something
or something like that.
Yeah, probably something like that.
Like they basically have to be above 500 the rest of the way to make the playoffs, and they can't even win like one game. And Ken Holland's there scratching his head like, how did this happen?
Well, he's not even in charge anymore from what we've seen.
But, I don't think he's ever been in charge.
So here's the ugly that comes out of this. Stuart Skinner, who's been appointed the starter with Jack Campbell's demotion, he actually got a shutout in Bakersfield last night. Eh? Mm-hmm. So good on Jack Campbell for sticking it to the Oilers. But Stuart Skinner has been appointed the starter with Jack Campbell's demotion to Bakersfield, has a 3.66 goals against average and an .865 save percentage in 13 games. Of all goalies mm-hmm. who have played 10 or more games this season, he has the worst save percentage and the second worst goals against average. Only Mackenzie Blackwood of San Jose is worse in goals against average.
And Mackenzie Blackwood is who the consensus trade target is for Edmonton to get a new goaltender. Goaltending isn't the problem.
Did you see, and again, I don't know if you saw the game last night or any of the highlights, but did you see Connor McDavid sitting on the bench at one point?
Oh, he looks miserable.
He looks like he wants to kill everyone.
Yes. Okay, to be perfectly honest, Connor McDavid looks miserable about 97% of the time.
Sure, yeah.
The only time, that 3% is when he's not on the ice and when his team is winning.
Well, that's about all he's got this year is 3% time of the winning.
Exactly. So, but like the issue is not
wasn't goaltending, obviously.
Wasn't the coach.
It's not Jay Woodcroft.
Jay Woodcroft had one of the best coaching records in like modern Oilers history.
So Kenny Holland, on the day he got fired, said, in the last 120 games, Jay Woodcroft had the best winning percentage of any coach in the NHL. Which I think is a lie, but that's besides the point. But he does have one of the best.
We know
in the last
the best.
Right.
Percentage.
We'll talk about him in a second. But he does have one of the best winning percentages over the last 120 mm-hmm. games. So if that's the case, why are you firing him?
Yes.
Because that makes no sense.
It is obviously not his fault. You are just changing deck chairs you're moving deck chairs on the Titanic because you are not solving the actual problem. The actual problem is that you tied yourself to so many boat anchor contracts because they are ex-Maple Leafs for some reason.
Edmonton is currently tied with Columbus and Tampa Bay for the second most goals given up this season with 72 pucks ending up behind their goalies and are tied for the second worst goals against per game at 4.0. They're actually tied with Minnesota, the only team that's worse than them, San Jose. This Oilers team is simply terrible defensively and will not get better until, like you said, they start dropping anchors.
They, like, look at, for everybody listening at home, go look at the Oilers cap friendly and look at how much money they are giving to awful defensemen.
So I think the best representation of what's going on wrong with the Oilers last night happened in warm-up because Broberg's shot went off the crossbar and hit Darnell Nurse in the face.
Is it bad that if he had to go to the room and get stitches, that the team would be functionally better without him
I'm not saying that out loud, but you're right.
Like, the hockey psychology did a great breakdown. Edmonton is playing the easiest defensive system for a team.
Right.
They're playing zone defense, which is the easiest defensive system to play in hockey, and they can't even get it right.
Well, Luke Gadzik was on the broadcast last night, and I was watching part of it because I thought, you know, whatever.
Nobody knows who or what to cover.
So Luke Gadzik said the exact same thing in that not only do they not know what to cover, but when they break out of the zone, nobody knows where to go. Like, they have zero concept of what they're doing when they're in their own zone. And so when they're trying to get out of their zone, it's just a debacle. It's more self-inflicted wounds than it is other teams putting them in a hole. And I just go, if that's the way this team is going to play, and again, I'm not their coach, I'm not Chris Knobloch. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know why he was brought in, but whatever.
Oh, I know why he was brought in.
I know why, but I don't care why he was brought in, because they got rid of a guy who legitimately was coaching to try and win for a guy who's now coaching just to make people happy. And my problem with
not
that,
people, one guy.
Well, I mean, Jackson up in the press box is the other guy that he's trying to keep happy, but whatever. But at the end of the day, I look at this team and I go, overhaul. You need to start telling everybody. And again, rumor has is that Ken Holland's put the sign up. Everybody except for Draisaitl and McDavid are for sale. Doesn't matter what you want, come and take it. I'll trade you picks. I'll trade you prospects. I'll trade you anybody on our roster in order to get this thing right.
I don't trust him to even.
But again, this is what
trade away assets.
But this is
right.
What it's come down to: is they're going to blow up this team in order to blow up this team.
Man, it's going to look really nice when Connor McDavid is an LA King.
I'm thinking Detroit. I think he's going
to
Detroit.
It's
going to
be fantastic. When Leon Draisaitl lifts the Stanley Cup with the Vegas Golden Knights.
That could happen. I could see that happening.
Like, it is going to be hilarious. Like, I'm sorry. We're talking about a Canadian NHL franchise. Nothing ever happens. Nothing.
Wow.
These guys have so much rope. And so much rope. And so much rope. And so particularly in Edmonton, where the problem is the fact that the entire front office is just Daryl Cates surrounding himself with
that
Oilers legends.
Right, that's a whole problem on its own. So,
like, this is not a good franchise.
Do you want to talk about a good franchise? Let's just keep going, because this we could probably
the bell of the ball
rip the Oilers all night. But the Boston Bruins continue to roll as they hit the Thanksgiving checkpoint with a 14-1-3 record to lead the NHL in points with 31. And one has to wonder if Jim Montgomery is going to be the favorite to win the Jack Adams Award this year, considering the record he has with this team and the players he's lost.
He's already won
now,
it.
Now, again, this was a stat I had no idea about. Montgomery hit the 100-game mark last night with the Bruins in their 3-1 win over Florida. His record over those 100 games, you want to take a shot at it? I know we talked about it before the show.
I already remember the numbers.
So his record in 100 games is 79-13-8.
13 regulation losses.
Listen to this now. Again, he has a 790 win percentage and an 870 points percentage as a head coach.
Hold on. The Bruins, since Montgomery took over, have recorded points in 87% of their games.
Right. Yep.
13% of the games are regulation losses.
Right.
That is disgusting.
They have one regulation loss this season in 18 games.
We need to stop saying that the Bruins are ever going to be bad.
Okay, so the Bruins have lost Zdeno Chara, which we already know. David Krejci and Patrice Bergeron both retired this year. Tyler Bertuzzi, Nick Foligno, Taylor Hall, and Dmitry Orlov all moved on. You go,
one of those guys is going to come back probably at the trade deadline.
But again, you go, okay, well, they've lost two main centers and probably three or four more forwards and a solid defender, all in the span of one summer, right?
Yeah.
And they're 14-1-3.
We're also, like, I think a year and a bit removed from Jake DeBrusque demanding a trade out of town then immediately rescinding it.
It was funny because DeBrusque was on the broadcast last night after they won, and he was informed by his dad that he had surpassed him in games played in terms of the NHL. He's at 402, and Louis DeBrusque is at 401. And his response was, "I'll never beat you in penalty minutes, though, Dad."
But, like, here's the thing.
Which I thought was priceless. Yes. I'm like, that's a great line.
The Boston Bruins are exactly what every other team wishes they were. They are a team that builds a culture
yeah.
of absolute dedication and excellence. They are not as brutal as Vegas when it comes to, you're not performing, there's the door, we'll find somebody who will. They will bring guys into that system, doesn't matter where they come from, but by the time they leave, they are Boston Bruins in their DNA.
But it starts not only in Boston, but in Providence as well. That Providence Bruins team is built with the exact same culture.
Yes.
And they legitimately teach it to those guys down there.
You will be a Bruin.
Like, if you want to play in the NHL, you're going to do what we say.
Yes.
And if you do what we say, you're going to be successful.
And you're going to do it our way.
Right. You're going to be successful, and we're going to see you in 4 years mm-hmm. playing in the TD Garden.
Because it's insane. You went through the list of the guys that have left. Like, fantastic, like great leaders that built that
right.
culture early on. And Brad Marchand is really the last remaining
okay.
piece of that. Because then there's that whole secondary group of, like, the Pasternak's, the McAvoy's, the DeBrusk's, the Swayman's that have come in and are now taking that mantle and going forward.
Okay, so you mentioned that in terms of guys that are stepping in. Bergeron and Krejci left. They were the top two centers last year.
Yeah.
The guys who stepped up this year in terms of playing in that one and two role are Pavel Zacha and Charlie Coyle. Never known for their offensive capabilities. Mm-hmm.
Zacha
a little
like
bit more.
Looks like a little bit of he's not going to live up to the pedigree.
Right.
He's
he looks like he's a bit of a project in terms of him coming over. Coyle was always a decent two-way forward, but never really reached his potential. Yeah, like no big deal. Pavel Zacha is playing with Pasternak and Marchand on that top line. Last night, before the Florida game, they were clicking at 56.8% of expected goals when they were on the ice. Like, their line is almost expected to score every second shift.
Yes.
That is ridiculous.
That is insane.
That doesn't happen for anybody.
No.
And again, Pavel Zacha, who? Where did he come from?
The guy that got cast off by multiple NHL
right.
teams because he was not performing as advertised.
And that's the thing, is that you look at this and you go, Boston has an expectation, and if you want to do what we... If you want to play at our level, you'll do what we say. And if you do what we say, we'll be successful.
That is...
It's a fair trade-off because, again, they're not putting the expectations too high, but they're telling guys, we have an expectation, we want you to meet that expectation.
Like I never give Jeremy Jacobs a lot of credit because I think that he is he's a character. But his ownership...
Character like a villain?
Yeah. He is an owner that knows where his skills are. His skills are in the boardroom. His skills are leading the NHL, making a good business. He does not meddle in the affairs of the Bruins front office. He lets Cam Neely and crew he trusts them to do whatever they need to build this franchise and maintain and be successful. That is something
but many
owners don't understand.
But he also doesn't accept the fact that losing is going to be something normal, because look what happened to Bruce Cassidy.
Yep.
Boston had a great season underneath him. They got bounced in the playoffs. He was gone.
Hold the guys accountable.
That's exactly what you want to hear from a guy, though.
Yeah.
If you're going to set an expectation of we're going to win every year, and the expectation is we're going to win, and not only win in the regular season, but the playoffs as well, you get bounced in the first round. Thanks for everything. There's the door. Sorry, that's how it works.
But then you have Ken Holland, who has systematically demolished the Edmonton Oilers by signing guys,
and
he gets to hold on to his job. Brad Treliving had to leave Calgary.
Well, again, hold on. Allmark and Swayman have also been incredibly good. That goaltending, and Montgomery said that today, is that without their goaltending, they wouldn't be where they are. And I fully agree that. I think that Allmark and Swayman have been fantastic for them. But this team avoids injuries as well. There's not a lot of guys... Again, I know Charlie McAvoy was out for a while. I know that. But every time somebody goes down, somebody else steps up.
Yep.
And that's the part that's so impressive, is that they have a guy like Brandon Carlo, for example, who steps into McAvoy's spot, plays extremely well, and then when McAvoy comes back, Carlo goes back to doing what he was doing so well, which is a shutdown role. And you go, how? How do these guys have these clones of each other throughout the lineup? This is ridiculous.
Yep.
But...
It is,
Boston is doing it right.
Yeah, because they don't bring in guys to play specific roles. They mold them into the role that they need. They make them the player that they need them to be so successfully. And they're not doing like a William Nylander at center thing where they're trying to jam a square peg in a round hole. They know what people's skills are, and they're like, all right, you're going to be this. And nothing else.
All right. We got a couple more stories to hit here. And, I mean, Boston's going to play again tomorrow against Detroit and probably just dismantle Detroit as well. But we'll see what happens there. But there's a team that's going to be headed for the history book shortly, and not for good reasons. And that might be the local team, the Manitoba Bison's men's hockey team. Jason, you've been witness to this over the last 2 years. So I'm sure the pain will be fresh and in your mind. But Manitoba's going to host the Alberta Golden Bears this weekend with Jason and Evan on the call. Alberta comes into the weekend with a record of 9-4-1 on a three-game winning streak and 8-2-0 in their last 10 games. So they're doing well. Manitoba, meanwhile, comes in with a 1-12-1 record this season, dropping both games spectacularly on the weekend and currently on a 1-9-0 run in their last 10. Mm-hmm. For those who may have missed it, on Friday, Calgary had 54 shots on Ross Harlech. Okay? Mm-hmm. 54 shots in a game in which the Bisons lost 2-1.
Yep.
Harlech made 52 saves, and the Bisons couldn't score more than one goal. Harlech was otherworldly in keeping the Dinos off the board as best as he could, as the Herbs outshot 54-25 in that game. Mm-hmm. 54 shots, 52 saves. Incredible. And then on Saturday, the Dinos showed up and tenderized the Bisons into ground beef by a 9-1 score that saw 13 Dinos collect points. It was ugly.
I think Colby Thornton was on track. The last home series, he was on track to smash the single-season saves record for the Bisons.
Well, 54 shots in one game suggests...
I think he needed to average like 25 saves the rest of the way to break the record. And that was like a month and a half ago.
Okay, so here's the sad part now. Bisons are 0-6 at Wayne Fleming Arena this season. Have been outscored on home ice by a 26-11 margin in those games. Mm-hmm. They have yet to score more than two goals at home in any game, so this weekend series against the Pandas may not go well. But here's where things go off the rails. If they lose this weekend, they're on a bye next weekend, and then that's followed by the December break. So they're done playing in 2023.
Yep.
They return in January to play the 11-3-0 UBC Thunderbirds on the 5th and 6th of January, followed by a home series against those same 11-2-1 Calgary Dinos on January 19th and 20th. So it doesn't get any easier. Manitoba's last win, for those asking, came on January 28th, 2023, a 7-6 victory over Trinity Western. Meaning that if the Bisons don't win against Alberta, UBC, or Calgary in the next six home games, they will officially have gone a full calendar year without winning a game at home.
And that's a Trinity Western team they also were swept by in the first half.
Again, let me just repeat that. If they don't beat Alberta, UBC, or Calgary in the next six home games, they will have gone a full calendar year without winning a game at home.
Yep.
And it may continue into a second calendar year because they have the 5-8-1 McEwen Griffins as their last home games of the season, and McEwen has looked dangerous the last couple of weeks, including beating MRU in one game, Mount Royal in one game, a couple weekends ago. So I got to ask you, Jason, have you seen any change under Gord Burnett that'll make you believe the streak's going to come to an end in the next six games, or are we talking about maybe a fall of 2024 chance of breaking this?
I want to say the hiring of Gord Burnett was late. By most standards.
Right, and I'm not taking I'm not putting this on Gord by any means.
Yeah, so he didn't get the summer of recruitment that he would have wanted. He really kind of came in a little bit last, like he was hired right before training camp.
But my question is, have you seen change from the beginning of the game until the beginning of the season until today that would give you any faith that they're going to win one of those next six games?
I have seen change in the wrong direction.
Oh no.
So this is a team, goaltending has always been a strong point. Like they've always been able to find goaltenders that can make saves. Like this goes all the way back to the Byron Spriggs era.
Right.
This is a team that has always given up a lot of shots, and like the mentality of Mike Sarrant was always, we're not going to be able to stop them all, but it's going to be, we're going to give up quantity while we stop quality. And they're still doing that fairly well, where they're pushing chances to the outside. Shots have to come from like very, very shallow into the zone from the point or from the outside walls. And they're doing, one thing they're doing fantastically well is defending the home plate area. Whenever like a rebound, whenever there's a shot and there's a stop, they're clearing out rebounds really well. The issue that I have found this year that did not exist the last couple years is their transitions and their breakouts have fallen off a cliff.
Okay, that's fair.
Because with one exception being the Apatagan line, whenever the Bisons get possession in their own end, the defense will stop up and they will try and get set up so they can get their breakout. And the forwards are already the next town over. They have made a break for the opposing blue line. And they get so far ahead that the defense are like, there's five people in between me and you.
There's 120 feet of space
and
between
them.
And
they have to wait. And then the forwards stop at the opposing blue line, turn around and say, where's the puck? Oh, it's behind our net because we didn't give the defenseman an outlet to be able to get out of the zone. And that is a problem that has persisted. And it's one of the reasons why they are, I believe they're leading the conference in icings.
Okay, that's
because they are consistently trying to get those lead passes.
Yeah, it's just not working.
And they can't.
Well, Bisons and Golden Bears this weekend. We'll see if they can maybe pull off, I guess, an upset is the best way to describe it. But, I mean, we'll see what happens at that point. Our Melbourne moment today. Let's get to the Melbourne moment because we haven't done that. We got 10 minutes left, just under 10 minutes left here, about 8 minutes left. Mm-hmm. You're going to meet the Mustangs today. I decided, you know what? We've talked a lot about the Melbourne Mustangs. We actually have never talked to the Mustangs. We've never had the Mustangs on. So I went looking and I found some video of the Melbourne Mustangs. So you're going to meet the guys tonight. So here we go. These are the Melbourne Mustangs as we get to meet these guys and hear a little bit about them.
I'm Todd Cutter.
My name's Bradley Apps. I'm from the UK, but I grew up playing hockey in New Zealand.
Matt Nikitin.
Chris Lawrence from Toronto, Canada.
My name is Matt Armstrong, and I'm from Ottawa, Canada.
Okay, so that was quick, but the first guy was 34-year-old forward Todd Cutter from Melbourne, Australia. He wears 71. Second was 28-year-old forward Bradley Apps from Turnbridge Wells, Great Britain. He wears number 21. Third was 18-year-old forward Matt Nikitin from somewhere in Australia where nobody, like all his previous teams, have no hometown listed for him. They only list Australia as the place he was born. So
he's doing that like intentionally.
Like
now.
I think it is now, yeah. So he wears number 15. Fourth with 36-year-old forward Chris Lawrence. He's from Etobicoke, Ontario, but he now calls Toronto home. He wears number 18. And the fifth guy you heard was 41-year-old forward Matt Armstrong from Orleans, Ontario, who's now from Ottawa, but he wears number 91. So you're going to hear them talk about this, their favorite NHL team, their favorite NHL player, and who wins the Stanley Cup. So here we go in that order. It'll go Cutter, Apps, Nikitin, Lawrence, Armstrong for each of these. Here we go.
My favorite NHL team is the Edmonton Oilers.
The Washington Capitals.
The Washington Capitals.
My favorite NHL team is the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Ottawa. Ottawa Senators. Let's go. Go the Sens.
So there you go. There's their favorite teams.
My favorite NHL player is actually Chris Letang.
Tom Wilson.
Alex Ovechkin.
My favorite current NHL player is Austin Matthews.
Well, my favorite player growing up was Brendan Shanahan, so.
The other favorite players. And finally, who is going to win the Stanley Cup according to them? Who will win the Stanley Cup?
The Edmonton Oilers will win the Stanley Cup.
Maybe New Jersey Devils?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Jack Hughes. Yeah. I'd like to see them go. They got a young team. I'd like to see them go a bit further.
Chicago Blackhawks. They got Bedard now.
The Toronto Maple Leafs will win the Stanley Cup this season.
Well, I mean, the Sens, right? The Sens will win the Cup.
So there's your Melbourne moment for today. We got to meet five of the players at least a little bit in terms of who they're picking for
only
favorite.
One of those teams is in a playoff
that's
spot.
Fine, whatever. That's why they're on the other side of the world, right?
Exactly.
Favorite NHL
this
team, favorite NHL players.
I believe this was from the summer.
No, it was after they won the favorite. Who's going to win the Stanley Cup was right before Australian series was there.
Okay.
And favorite NHL team and favorite NHL player were after the season, yeah. So, I mean, like I said, I had to go looking for some video to meet these guys, but it was nice to see all five guys doing both videos, which is kind of cool. So, a couple of announcements before we get going. The Female World Sports School Challenge is back for another year at the Hockey for All Center in West Winnipeg, and UMFM will broadcast games from the event once again. Hosted by St. Mary's Academy, 16 of the best AAA, CSSHL, and JWHL teams will meet over 4 days of action to see who stands atop the podium. Can the Calgary Fire defend their gold medal this year? Will an Alberta team make it 4 gold medals for that province at the last 5 tournaments? The only one they didn't win was a couple years ago against Stansted, won that one. Stansted College of Quebec. So we'll find out from January 25th, 28th at the Hockey for All Center when 2024 Female World Sports School Challenge gets underway. Heard exclusively on UMFM. Jason, it's always a good tournament. You've been there a couple times. Thoughts on that?
I love it. I mark it on my calendar every year.
We're going to bring out Jason and Evan to do one of the games, I hope. So we'll see if we can get Evan out there, break him out. 2024 U-Sports National Women's Hockey Championship, sponsored by Green for Life Environmental and presented by Connect Energy, will happen March 14th to 17th, 2024 at Merle's Belcher Place in Saskatoon. The hockey show is going to be live from there on March 14th. I'm going out there. I've left the door open if Jason wants to go out there, but he hasn't committed yet, which is fair. I'll give him that. I'll let him make a decision. But If he wants to come out, he can. This is I'm going to play Saskatchewan captain Kennedy Brown talking about the importance of having the national championship in Saskatoon as a way to grow the women's game in the next generation. So here is Kennedy Brown talking about why it's important to have the national championship out there.
And I grew up playing hockey in small town Okotoks, and so the majority of my like women or female hockey players that I looked up to were on the national women's hockey team, like Haley Wickenheiser and those sorts of players. Especially being near Calgary, I had a lot of opportunities to go out and watch some of those games. And then the thing that kind of stuck out to me the most is I remember I was probably 12 years old and we went and practiced with the UFC team and got to meet the players and see their dressing room. And it just kind of gave me something to strive towards, seeing that there was opportunities like that as a female hockey player, especially being on a team that was like the first female hockey team in Okotoks for minor hockey and being at the first provincial championship that Okotoks had been to, and having some of those experiences kind of solidified that there was some places to go beyond just I was going to be done hockey when I was done midget. And that was something that really stood out for me.
So there's Kennedy Brown, captain of the Huskies, again, giving her thoughts on why it's important to get out there. Again, highly recommended. We've had a great time at the two nationals we went to in PEI and in London, Ontario. So that was fantastic. Obviously, it would be a good time out in Saskatoon. They know how to have a good time out in Sasky there. So we'll get out there and see what they can do. Last but not least, and certainly definitely not least, next week the Hockey Show will line up a few guests for another major announcement that we'll see Jason and I involved in this announcement.
Yeah,
probably in a large degree as well. We're pumped for this one. So assuming our guests are still in, I'm still waiting for confirmation on two of the people that said they were going to show up. But we should have guests in studio next week, maybe even on the phone in terms of what we're going to do. So stay tuned for that next week, folks. We got about 30 seconds remaining here, Jay. Anything you want to bring up before we go?
Everyone, if you are in Canada, please invest in winter tires. We are just about at that time of year, so.
And if you don't have them on and you have them, now start booking your appointment now, please.
Because your appointment will probably be in January at this point.
At this point, it's not going to be good. Tonight, we're going to close the show, though. And Jay, we were laughing about this before the show because it's pretty ridiculous, but. Tonight we close the show with two guys that won't be spending Christmas together, as Daryl Hall and John Oates heard here their song Jingle Bell Rock. Daryl Hall filed a confidential lawsuit and has a temporary restraining order against former bandmate John Oates, which was filed in Nashville. So I guess there's going to be no holiday spirit for those two. No? Nothing?
A weird story.
That's all right. I thought we'd finish off with a little bit of laughter there. Obviously, hate to do it at somebody's expense, but whatever. But with that, folks, we're out here for another week. Stay tuned. Free Range Radio, Skippy coming up next here on 101.5 UMFM. It's the Hockey Show. We'll see you next week, everybody. Have a good one.
Excuse me, I'm in the middle of an important call. Get me somebody. Anybody.
You're listening to CJUM FM 101.5, broadcasting from the University of Manitoba, where we're always happy to take your call.
And get me somebody while I'm waiting.